Hi everyone, this is Guy Frankel and this is the Partners for Progressive Israel podcast. Today I'm sitting in Sderot with Anat Chefetz of the Movement for the Future of the Western Negev. It's an organization that was created in the wake of the war in Gaza this past summer by residents living in the area. The organization calls for a diplomatic solution to be reached to avoid another round of bloodshed in the south. Thank you, Anat, for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
I wanted to open up with a question about the mission statement of the organization itself. What is your goal? What convinced you that this time was different? Was there a moment in the war that you realized enough is enough and you and other like-minded people in the area felt that a change was needed?
Okay, so I think the last war was a wake-up call for everybody living in the region, not necessarily people with our political convictions or people who ended up joining the movement, but it was an all-around, I think, sentiment that this war was different. It was, first of all, I think it was one too many. And it made people realize that the repeated military operations in Gaza are not working for them, are not working to enhance security, peaceful living, or you know, a normal future here. So regardless if whether you think, you know, that we need a diplomatic solution or not, it's just, you know, it's not the best way to resolve the problem. And people felt what you have to realize, I'm sure you know, that most people living on the border, on the Israeli side, were forced to evacuate from their homes. I spent most of the war, most of the summer, it was close to 2 months, away from home with my two kids.
You moved to Kibbutz Erafula?
We moved to a kibbutz, yeah, to Kibbutz Mishmar Emek. But it was a very traumatic experience for everybody. For the communities, for the people. People are suffering from really the effects of the war on your mental state, but also on you know, everything, the social infrastructure, the economy, the local economy, local businesses. Everything is still, you know, undergoing a process of recovery. So I think this was the motivation, and it was really shared by most of the people here. We, the people who formed the movement, believe that there is a solution. This isn't a, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to, you know, continue. And we believe that there is a diplomatic solution. And obviously the question is which solution is viable or is, you know, would be effective or could be implemented.
So you're not embracing one particular
We're
diplomatic
not
solution.
Embracing Okay, so you asked about our goals. I think we have a few, but like the central ones are the first and foremost to get people living here political or politically active, because what has characterized and I'm sad to say, and I'm, you know, I was part of it. We were all part of it, or accomplices to this a state of I wouldn't say indifference, but a feeling that we are unable as citizens, as residents, to change or to affect the you know, political agendas or what decision makers do or what the government advances. And this has changed, but not enough. And we're working within the communities with people here by holding meetings and bringing in experts and talking to the people and writing about it and everything, to get people more aware and to get people more active. So this is one, I would say, one central objective. The other one is to make people believe that there are viable options for a solution, because it's very it's a very common statement that you would hear from people here and across Israel. That they're saying, but we've tried everything. There isn't a partner on the other side. Who are you going to talk to? Hamas or terrorists? We gave them everything, or we offered everything, and there was the disengagement from Gaza. We left Gaza, and now they're shooting rockets at us. So what do you want? And this is something we have to confront. It's a challenge. And in order to confront the challenge, what we've done is we partnered up with several organizations and also individuals who are experts on the issue of Gaza, whether military or ex-military people, very high-ranking, like the Council for Peace and Security. They have many, many experts. Former Shin Bet head Yuval Diskin was here and spoke to us. We also brought him to speak in front of a very large audience in one of the kibbutzim here. People from the academy, universities, former diplomats. So what we're doing is we're bringing attention to the fact that there are, and it's true that there isn't, I think, one necessarily just one alternative or one option, but there are several strategies that can be advanced in Gaza. And the fact is that none of them have or was seriously considered by Israeli governments in the last, since the disengagement, in the last decade or so. And this is what we're demanding from our leaders: consider or explore strategies for Gaza, be creative, be bold, be determined, take initiative, and decide what's the best way to resolve the situation, because what you're doing now is not, it's not working for us. It's not working for us. And I think that the last or the third central goal is really to take this to the political sphere and also to the public, like to the national public sphere. So to get people talking about Gaza and the need for a solution for Gaza or with Gaza. It's convenient for politicians even now during an election campaign not to talk about Gaza. Gaza is a very difficult issue. People from the left are, I would say, they don't talk about it enough because there's this, this feeling that Likud and Netanyahu are stronger on security issues, so it's not a good issue to bring
so,
up.
Right, so they've set the agenda. So whatever they say, it doesn't, will always have to sort of be within this framework of what the right has said.
And then I think Likud doesn't like to talk about Gaza because it's a failure. I mean, they've failed. It's not, they didn't bring us really, you know, more security, people living here. We don't feel more secure, we don't feel more safe. So for politicians, it's, you know, they avoid it whenever they can. And there's been a lot of talk about the fact that public opinion polls have shown that what Israelis care about most in these elections are social issues and economic issues, and we insist that, you know, people have to talk about the issue in Gaza, or security issues, also because they're linked to the other issues. You can't separate. You can't say, okay, you know, I'm not going to talk about Gaza. I'm just going to talk about, you know, the secure or economic issues. It goes hand in hand.
So your organization is not the only one that was established in the wake of the war. Why do you think this was a turning point? How is this different than the war in 2012 and the war in 2009 and certainly the wars in Lebanon in 2006? Was there a specific moment mm-hmm. that you can pinpoint, and if you can't, that's perfectly fine, where you said, we have to take action?
Well, it's a good question, one I keep asking myself, and I'm not sure I have a good answer. I think both the intensity of the war and the fact, but it was also true for the Second Lebanon War, it exposed the weakness of, or I don't know whether to call it the weakness, but the vulnerability of the Israeli, home front, or the communities on the border. But rockets that, you know, they fired rockets or missiles on Tel Aviv. So half the country was under the effect of this war, and it lasted for almost 2 months. So it was very, very strong. And I think it made people realize that no matter how much you wanna put Gaza aside, you know, repress or you know, forget about it, you can't. And it was really, I think, the intensity and the and also because it lasted for so many days and weeks and almost 2 months. That's my explanation. I'm not sure I have a better one.
So I noticed on the way here that, and I know this for a fact, I know this area is a bit more hawkish, it's a bit more right-wing. I have a family in Ashdod. They tend to lean more left, but Ashdod is known for being a stronghold of the good. And on the way here, I noticed like the almost an overabundance of signs endorsing Elisha's party. I think I saw Baruch Malzel, like a sign for a sign with his face on it, which is really upsetting. Mm-hmm. Likud signs.
Yeah.
It's interesting, and it sort of makes sense. Like when you live in an area that's constantly being fired upon, it's sort of only, I think, to a certain degree, it's only natural to sort of to recoil and say, you know, do whatever you can to.
So I disagree.
Okay.
I strongly disagree, and I've had this conversation with reporters throughout the war when we started talking about the movement, or even before the movement was founded. I gave several interviews in which I called for, you know, on the Israeli government to not necessarily just you know to stop the war now, but you know, reach a ceasefire, and then you have to, you know, come to the negotiating table and start doing something. And they said, but how is it possible, you know? And I think it makes perfect sense. But also, there are a lot of people living here who feel the same way, or, you know, who ideologically lean to the left. I think it's more convenient, obviously not in the towns, more in the kibbutzim and the moshavim. But these are the people living on the border also, and they have suffered greatly during the war. We, on my kibbutz, we lost 2 people who were killed at the end of the war. So it's not, you know, and we, another kibbutz member was killed in 2008. Another kibbutz member now was injured and both his legs were amputated. You know, we know what it's like to suffer the effects of the war. And most of the people on my kibbutz and on the neighboring kibbutzim will tell you this is why we need to reach a solution. I think it's more convenient for the media to show. I'm not sure. I don't want to speculate about their interests, but I think it's the easy way out to find the people who are shouting, you know, you have to go into Gaza and conquer Gaza and, you know, whatever, hit Hamas stronger. Maybe it's, you know, it's better, it's a better news item to find, I don't know, it's more colorful. But it doesn't necessarily truly represent the sentiments of all the people living here. And we're forming our movement, we're forming very beautiful and strong partnerships with people from Sderot and from Ashkelon and from Netivot. Who we just said there was this the big demonstration in Tel Aviv, and one of our members was on stage. She spoke, a woman from a young woman, a mother of 2 from Sderot.
I remember she said something to the effect.
Ronit Katzir Chavivian. She said, in the previous elections, I voted for Bibi. I voted for Likud. No more. I realize, you know, that he's working. This policy of maintaining the conflict is working against me and against my self-interest. And this is what people, I think, are beginning or are more and more realizing.
And I remember she said something to the effect of when she went to the U.S. and her son asked about what was the translation of red alert.
Of red alert.
Because he was so used to. And I remember that really affected me.
Mm-hmm.
But how do you convince people living here who do lean right,
mm-hmm.
like why do you think then that there is such a tendency for places like Ashdod for example, because Stuttgart, I know, was hit quite hard.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, Sderot and Ashkelon and Ashdod are historically right-wing.
Okay.
It's not just because... And the kibbutzim are left-wing because they were founded by...
Shemar Tzair.
So there are a lot of historical reasons and sociological reasons that, you know, I don't think we need to explain. I think, but our challenge is, and I think we're doing a good job, but it's hard, is based on the solidarity or the shared experience or the shared, really, suffering. We're able to form, I think, a shared language. I mean, I can talk to people in Sderot or to mothers in Sderot because we're experiencing similar difficulties, not the same difficulties, but similar difficulties. And in this sense, we're very close. And also, yeah, in solidarity. And then even if we disagree, the argument wouldn't become hostile. We can disagree, but also it's easier for us to find places on which we can agree, also politically. And more and more people are saying our government or this government does not have my best interest in mind. And it doesn't matter whether I'm right wing or left wing, it's, you know, as I said, this solution isn't a solution, and I want the government to give me a better solution. And they don't have to be people who think about the people in Gaza or the suffering of the people on the other side. They don't have to be ideologically left-wing. But they're saying for us to have a normal life or a better life, we need this long-term solution in Gaza. And this is where, you know, we can work together.
A few days ago, I spoke to someone who works with women wage peace.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember she said, the reason I brought that up, the whole idea of it's so easy to dehumanize people is because she said something to that effect, like sometimes, you know, you live in an area like this and you get so frustrated you're just sort of like, bombard them, I don't even care anymore,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And I think to a certain degree that's a natural human instinct because you're just so mm-hmm. frustrated, it's not wise. How do you, I mean, do you confront people like that? And what do you say to them how do you convince them that it's not really in their best interests to pursue that type of thinking?
Well, I mean, as I said, it's a matter of really when the starting point is, listen, I also live here, and rockets are being fired at my kids as well, and I lost people close to me, but I think, I believe, and I know, and I've learned, and I explored, you know, other options, and I'm convinced and persuaded that there are other ways to improve our reality, our situation. You get people to listen, and sometimes you manage to convince them. But I want to say something, I think, well, on the other side of this, or the two extremes, that we talked about the fact that, you know, the maybe like the natural response of people who are being fired at is to hate the people on the other side. But also, I can say from the point of view of a leftist living on the border, I have a lot of criticism towards the left, the Israeli left.
Okay. I actually was going to ask you about that
because
you mentioned that the left didn't really...
I think that there's like... there's an automatic response also coming from the left whenever there's, for instance, a war in Gaza, and the automatic response is to say, well, you know, obviously what's going in Gaza is
people are suffering, it's and
terrible, and people
right,
are suffering, and people are dying, and you know, you have to stop the war. And when you live here, you're in a more complex situation because you understand that the reality isn't necessarily black and white. There are indeed people on the other side of the border who want to kill us and who want to kill our kids. And this has to be confronted before... Now, obviously, I believe that, you know, Israel is responsible or is mostly responsible for the ways things have developed in Gaza, and it is also responsible for the ongoing conflict. But I know that the Palestinians are responsible as well, and I want people in central Israel, when there's a war, to also think about me. Left-wing people, which, and I consider myself part of the Israeli left, I want them to also think about me and to think about my kids and to think about our suffering. And I think the reason I'm saying this is because I think that there's this tendency to categorize or to label people on the South as people who are automatically against the Palestinians, or who are very right-wing, or who have very aggressive responses to, you know, whenever there's a conflict. The same way it's easy for the media to go to these places and find the people who are more, who have more extremist views, or who, you know, I think it's easy for people who are not from here to look at this, the region or the South, as very, you know, as very homogenic, as very leaning to the right, as very, and then to say, okay, but all people, you know, the only thing people in the South are saying is that, you know, that you have to, that the IDF has to be strong against Hamas. It's not true. The reality is that it's not true, that the discourse here is much more
nuanced,
varied and nuanced. But, you know, people have a tendency to think in black and white, and the media helps them. And I think really what we're trying to do is to get this conversation to make it more informed and more open to other opinions and to other perspectives, because the solution isn't very easy. Obviously, there isn't an easy solution in Gaza. You have to have, I think, really shared motivation and shared goals, and then you can see what's the best way to work towards finding the solution, or, you know, advancing the solution.
Do you find that, and I bring this up because when I was at the rally on Saturday, I remember hearing Me'il Dagan speak, and Me'il Dagan, people like Yuval Diskin, over the last few years, they've been demonized by the right, despite the fact that they have really, like, impeccable security credentials. It doesn't matter. I mean, I remember going to a parliament meeting with Ami Ayalon a few years ago with Blue White Future. Mm-hmm. And I remember there were a number of settlers there, like very hardcore ideological settlers. And someone said, so when did the Shabak become, when did it start recruiting leftists? And it was like, and it was totally bizarre. Mm-hmm. Do you find that like your group kind of goes through that with people on the right as well? Like, oh, well, it doesn't matter that you live in this area, that you've suffered, you don't know what you're talking about, and stop, quote unquote, exploiting your suffering and pursuing dangerous policies.
Yeah. Well, yeah, definitely. When we were just, we just formed the movement, that the first couple of months we've had many, many attacks from the right, calling us, although we declared from, you know, day one that we're nonpartisan, and obviously we're political, but we're not, you know, identifying with a political party, but we were repeatedly attacked by people from the right saying, you know, this is a big, because whenever you bring up the words diplomatic solution, you're automatically labeled as left wing. But also during the war, there was some writing, and still now, I mean, you can hear it. You know, you hear it from the political sphere. People who are saying you supported the disengagement from Gaza, the disengagement from Gaza. You deserve what's happening now. We told you that, you know, if Israel leaves Gush Katif, if Israel leaves Gaza, Hamas is going to start firing rockets at Israel, and, you know, this is what happened. And there was this, this article about Michal Dolev, I'm sorry, Michal Kaidar.
Oh, that said that she was exploiting.
Her husband's death. Essentially, he said, you're responsible, you know, for your husband's death. Because people like you, 10 years ago, they supported this dangerous policy or the disengagement. And now, you know, you're paying, you leftists are paying the price. So it does exist. I can't say it doesn't exist. I still think that the fact that we're from here gives us more credibility. And I think it's, you know, it's justified. I think it should give us more credibility. Because we know what we're talking about. When I'm saying, listen, this thing with repeated military, you know, excursions into Gaza is not enhancing my security. I know what I'm talking about. It's not, I'm not fantasizing. I don't have this fantasy of, you know, a perfect, I don't know, that Gaza is, you know, is or Hamas are, you know, peace loving and they just want to, you know, make peace with us. But I know for a fact that during the period I've lived here, we've had more and more fortification of buildings and of structures within our communities. We're just, you know, building more and more concrete and fences, and we have more soldiers in the area. I mean, it's turning into a military zone, and nothing is improving. I mean, wars are becoming more and more frequent. We're losing more people. So what, you know, how can you say that this is, you know, this is the best solution? And why not try a different path?
Are there any particular politicians that have been really responsive to you? I know it's sort of a difficult question to ask because...
No. It's not a difficult... Well, before the elections and also now, but now, you know, just like this pause and, you know, everything, you know, it's just focused on the elections. But I think one of our strongest allies was MK Omer Bar-Lev from the Labour Party, or Hamachane Tzioni, as they're called now. He's very, very close to the Gaza border region. He was here before the war, during the war, and after the war. He has a plan or a policy for a program for Gaza. And we were actually in the process of starting to form a lobby, in the Knesset lobby, with Omer Bar-Lev. But then the elections were announced and everything, you know, halted. And now, you know, we have to wait and see. And he's obviously not the only one. We've had much support from many politicians from several different parties, not just one party in particular. Not the right wing was obviously less responsive to our letters and invitations to come talk. But we had a panel 2 weeks ago with party representatives, and we had MKs from Habayit Hayehudi, Israel Beitenu, Halikud, Amachane Tzioni, and Meretz. So we try to approach all the parties. We want to hear what they have to offer us. But we have our strong views and opinions regarding the solutions that they have to offer. We don't just say, oh, great, okay, so you have a plan for us, and, you know, it's good enough. We're very critical of some of the, you know, the solutions or the answers that, you know, that they give us.
What do you plan on doing when the Knesset reconvenes?
Well, that's, you know, it's a wonderful...
It's a big question
because obviously it depends on the kind of coalition that will be formed after the elections. I'm sure we're going to have to do much more lobbying regardless of the type of coalition that will be formed. But, you know, the kind of lobbying we will have to do would depend on, you know, whether it's going to be, it's a party or it's a government that will immediately start advancing negotiations over Gaza, and then you know, we would have to do something, you something different than if we have, again, a government that has no interest in advancing anything in Gaza. And I'm also, well, personally concerned that we could be facing another round of violence in Gaza quite soon if we have another right-wing government. But I'm not sure, you know, it's not necessarily grounded in, I don't know, intelligence reports, but it's my feeling. And we have met with, or are constantly meeting with people who know what's happening in Gaza and who are saying that for now Hamas doesn't have an immediate interest in escalating the situation. But if they feel that nothing is changing, that there isn't really a horizon for change, they might initiate another, I don't know, whatever, military round sooner than we expect or sooner than we think. So it's a greater concern, I think.
Anat Chafetz, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.